My good people, today I want to start things off with a little listener love. Now I'm going to read to you a review that is coming to us from the iTunes ratings and reviews section, and it is by Styles K. She says, I discovered Ayana on Instagram a few months ago during an IG live session. I immediately began listening to her podcast. It has quickly become a favorite. It's like chatting with a good friend who gives great advice when you're in need of a little life and career direction. I enjoy the Candid Kiki and the 7-Minute Sunday episodes. I especially appreciate the honest conversations. Thank you so much to Styles K for heading over to Apple's iTunes podcast section and giving the show a review. If you want to have your opportunity to have your review read, make sure that you've already stopped by and left a rating and a review for the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. I highly encourage you to review the show if you are enjoying what you hear, because that is what will help me continue to bring this show to the masses. And if you're listening along and you feel so inspired and you're like, you know what, I just want to share, I definitely encourage you to take a screenshot, maybe even record yourself listening to the podcast, and then head over to Instagram, follow us at Switch, Pivot, or Quit, and share your screenshot with us on Instagram stories, because when you do that, I repost your shares. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. If you head over to switchpivotorquit.com, you will see that Pick My Brain sessions are now available with me, your chief encourager, Ayana Angel. They are one-on-one 60-minute sessions that are a hybrid of consulting and coaching. That is where you will get the best out of me. We can talk everything from digital marketing to podcast development to podcast growth, social media strategy, book publishing, marketing and promotions, DIY publicity, pitching, planning, execution, anything that you are thinking, hey, I could really use somebody to bounce these ideas off of and some expert advice in terms of what direction I should go in, what would potentially work, what might not work. I have an idea, but I'm not really sure about how it will pan out. Go ahead and book your 60-minute Pick My Brain session with me now. And you'll find the link to do so on switchpivotorquit.com. On today's show, we're chatting with Kathleen Hart, a salary negotiation coach and creator of Be Brave, Get Paid. Kathleen is a seasoned salary negotiation expert who is on a mission to help women earn more. Through her coaching, speaking, and online negotiation boot camp, Be Brave, Get Paid, she helps women gain the skills and the confidence to negotiate for the income they deserve. Now, you really want to tune in for this conversation, whether it be that you are a corporate climber looking to negotiate a better salary for yourself, maybe if you're transitioning to a new company, or if you are out there trying to raise funds for your company or business, or negotiate deals with the next big business or advertiser for your company. Make sure you tune in, because Kathleen has some really, really good skill sets that you can, that she shares with us, that you can take and apply and use your everyday situation. So get your notepad ready, get your ears ready, listen up, and let's get into it. Welcome to the show, Kathleen. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay! So happy to have you, excited for our chat. Let's just go ahead and get started. So we're going to dive in and start off with your early years. What was your very first job? If you could think back to what that was and remember what sort of like that job was and share that with us, maybe even how you got the job, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. You want to go way back to like childhood
Let's say the first job that you got paid for, remember getting paid for, like, what were you doing?
Well, the first job that I paid myself for is I had like a little business. I was like, I didn't realize that I was hustling when I was a kid, but I would go to Chinatown with my mom to visit my grandma. Mm-hmm. And Sailor Moon back in the day was hot. And so I had 25 cent machines and I would go in there and I would just bring quarters upon quarters and buy all these stickers. Mm-hmm. And then I'd bring them back to school and kind of show them around. Oh, this one's more shiny. So this one's $1.25. And oh, this is a collector's $2. So I would sell that. So that was the first time I paid myself, which is really funny. I remember that more recently. But my first job besides that is I was a lifeguard at my local pool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Look at that. Giving back, saving lives.
Well, it's kind of funny because I became a lifeguard after learning to swim because I drowned. Mm-hmm. and I was saved by a lifeguard. So that was like, yes. So I had actually drowned. Like I was doing a swim test in the deep end and I didn't know. My friend had told me in order to get in the pool, I have to do the swim test. Uh-huh. But that was only for the diving board. I didn't realize it. So I was like, okay. I start swimming and I start drowning and that lifeguard saved me. So it was after that I learned to swim and I was like, oh, I want to teach more people to swim and I'll be a lifeguard myself.
That is pretty, I want to say pretty cool, but at the same time, a little scary. Cool that you turned that experience into something positive for sure.
Yeah, totally. I think that's how my mind works.
Right. That's good. That's good. So as you know, on this podcast, we talk all about the switch, pivot, or quit experience. So you've had your own SPQ experience. So I'd love for you to just get into that a bit and share a bit of what your story has been like for our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, just number one, I love that idea of, you know, just everything about a switch, pivot, or quit, because so often we kind of think we have to just like quit or that's it. We don't really think through that process of, oh, can I switch it or can I pivot? Mm-hmm. So yeah, my very first experience was, you know, after college, I was working, running some nonprofit programs. And while I loved the work I was doing, that was everything I had dreamed about doing when I was in college. Mm-hmm. I was living paycheck to paycheck and feeling really miserable and burnt out. So I started to think to myself, you know, how can I make this more sustainable? Like, how is this really the life that I want to live? Right. And I started exploring my options. At that time, I didn't want to switch. I didn't want to pivot. I didn't want to quit. I wanted to keep doing it. So the first thing I thought is, oh, I'm going to make more money through getting two other jobs. Mm-hmm. So I was working over 60 hours a week, trying to make this nonprofit life work for me. And I just couldn't sustain it. Like I got so burnt out and I was like, you know, I need to reevaluate. Is this really what I want to do right now? And I kind of came to the decision, you know what? This is something I'm going to quit for now, but I'm going to come back to. Like I always am going to be involved in nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I started thinking, well, how can I switch? What do I want to do? And the thing that came into my mind, like over and over again, is architecture. It's something I've always been fascinated in. So I thought, you know, why not? Like, let's just try this out. I applied for every single position in architecture firms, both in Los Angeles and San Francisco, and ended up getting a role that, you know, kind of married my history with international development, which is why I studied with this new architecture world. And I was like, this is sick. I'll go work in an architecture firm. I was actually getting paid more for it started as an internship. I was getting paid more for my internship than my nonprofit role.
Of course.
So yeah. So I was like, this is a life. I love this.
Right.
So pretty quickly within that, you know, I realized, you know, what do I like about architecture? I kind of, you know, in talking to the architects there, I realized that this isn't probably something I want to go back to school with. Mm. But I started dabbling in software design when I was there. I would constantly see things that were on our website and go over to talk to our software department and just be like, hey, you guys, like you should change this or this button doesn't look right or this leads to here, which is a dead link. They're like, you kind of have a natural knack for this. Why don't you come work for us? So that was kind of it was almost like a pivot, but it was really a big switch that I didn't expect coming and was just from me following my curiosity and just looking into things I enjoyed. And that was some of my big changes, but the bigger changes in my life came after that. So it was, you know, like so many of us, you know, we look at our Instagram feeds. Back then it was just my Facebook feed of all my friends traveling the world, living their best life. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm like, just going to work every day. Is this what I really want to do? So I had begun saving up, and this is something I'd started when I worked in nonprofit, just save up money. My dream was to quit my job and travel. And eventually I was able to do that, quit my job and begin traveling. And it was during that time I started, you know, experimenting with different business ideas, with things I was interested in. That eventually led me to, you know, developing a podcast where, you know, like you, I just want to talk about the real, real story behind what it is it take to take a leap in your life. How does it take? How do you get that courage? And all of that has led me through different coaching paths, but I always came back to helping women face their fears and get more in control of their finances, because those were the things that allowed me to take all my leaps in my life. So most recently, I made my big switch of, you know, taking the podcast and focusing my attention instead on the salary negotiation workshops and training coaching that I do. And I've been working on a course to do that, to get that into the world. Cause I think, you know, if I can impact women to earn like a couple thousand, if not tens of thousands of dollars more, that will enable them to, you know, do similar things like I did, have the safety net to be able to take more risk and experiment so that they can switch, pivot, or quit within their life. Yeah.
I love that. And we're going to talk more about the negotiations, the salaries, all that good stuff in a bit. But first I want to know, did you have to make any sacrifices to make any of your switch, pivots, or quits? Like when you were deciding to go from the nonprofit space into the architectural space, or, you know, when you were saying, okay, I'm actually going to go out on my own and just try my hand at sort of this entrepreneurial lifestyle or freelancer lifestyle, did you have to make any sacrifices?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a part of it, you know, is what are you going to give up in order to make some of these things happen? So for me, you know, when I first moved, I was living in LA and I had my own place then, but in order to kind of make this architecture life happened for me, I had to move back in with my mother, because I didn't know, it started as an internship. I didn't know if this would be something where they would, you know, extend an offer to me after that 3 months. So it was just like, you know, if worst case scenario, I can't put myself in the position where I'm tied to a year-long lease if I don't know if I'm going to be here forever. So that was a big sacrifice. But actually, once I was living with my mom, I was like, this is amazing. Like, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, not everyone has that relationship with their parents. But for me, it was really an opportunity for me to get to know my mom better on like
as an adult.
Exactly. And our relationship is so strong now because of that time. So I'm really, really grateful that I did that in the end, although it did feel like a sacrifice because, you know, I couldn't, you know, stay out or, you know, come in and out when I wanted. But there were positive aspects to that. And the other one is in building businesses, you know, sometimes I've had to stick with doing work that I didn't want to do in order to support the business growth for the thing I did want to do. So, you know, I've been doing, you know, using my software skills, my kind of like design, I often do consulting work for, you know, how do people do their websites and giving them updates or going behind the scenes and fixing it with that. But that's not where I'm headed. That's not what I'm trying to do forever and forever. But, you know, if I ever need extra cash cushion or in the past, you know, definitely as a way to make that transition easier, you know, I'm happy to do that, because if it can provide me the opportunity to make that leap, then I'm all down for that.
What do you think would have been useful to know before embarking on your current career path or this journey that you're on right now?
Yeah. Well, you know, something like you teach a course about, you know, how to make a profit doing podcasting. And for me, when I was first starting, you know, in my 9 to 5 every day, listening to podcasts, watching blogs, watching vlogs and videos, all that, all those, you know, inspirational nuggets to fill myself up. I just thought, oh, I just have to create content and profit will come. That's a business. And I didn't realize at that time. I think it's a little bit better now. I think, you know, it's a little bit more transparent that like you can't just create content and the money will come. And also ads aren't going to work for everybody now, whereas it did in the past. But I wish I had known that, because I thought I just needed to have the courage to create the content. And what I realized is that, you know, it took me so long to build up this courage, but by the time I built up the courage to do all the stuff I wanted to do, it was like, wait, where's the money? It's not coming in. So had I known that was just like the very first step, I think I would have jumped into it quicker, trying to get to the next step, which is, okay, now how do I create a profit off of that content? Yeah. So I would have done that.
That's
I get it, because there's, and that's why I try to be as transparent as possible and try to encourage other people to be as well, because a lot of times, you know, we have these curated lifestyles that people see online, but you don't really understand what goes into it behind the scenes to make it work and what the extra things are that people are doing. And I actually talked about that on an episode recently, because sometimes there's these unspoken clues to success, but you don't really know what they are. You have to be paying attention though to pick up on what people are doing that you might need to be doing in order to get where they are. You know, and that's just the stuff that people don't readily tell you. They don't really tell you everything. Mm-mm. So what's been one of the most useful pieces of advice maybe that you've received from someone else in your career thus far?
You know what? I don't know. There's so many things. I feel like there's just, my head is like exploding from like other people's advice. There's so much good stuff out there. But, you know, I think in line with what we were just talking about and you were touching on is, you know, in my podcast, I had interviewed this woman and I didn't know, you know, behind the scenes, I was like, well, on the surface, it doesn't look like she has anything crazy. I don't even think she had like a Facebook page, a Twitter feed. Her website was just like, you know, it was pretty basic. There was nothing fancy about it at all. She was actually one of the most profitable people I talked to. She had the most banging business. And one of the things that we talked about behind the scenes is she was like, everyone focuses on the vanity metrics and you don't focus on the business itself. And so you're so focused on looking good that you forget that in order to make this a sustainable lifestyle, or, you know, to be able to grow and create the impact that you want to have, you have to actually focus on the business, the real work that you're doing behind the scenes. Yeah. So she's like, I do that and I let it speak for me. I have an ongoing flow of clients and I who cares if my website looks like crap, you know, I'd rather be focusing on helping people get results than to be focusing on something that will make, you know, a few people think I look more fancy than I do. And those things can come over time.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you made any missteps that you later realized were maybe a good thing and a good learning lesson for yourself?
Ooh, you got the questions. Let me see. Any missteps? I don't know. Because honestly, I do think like my mind just always works in the way where like if I'm learning, then I know I'm growing. And I'm moving forward.
You know, I like to ask that question because a lot of times people get so like, oh, mistakes and regret and all this. Yeah. And it's not about that as much as just like you said, it's about learning. It's about growth. And so, you know, when you look back, I know that there's things that I know now that I didn't know before. And I only learned it as a result of making a misstep and then realizing like, oh, okay, so maybe I could have done that differently. Or maybe I could have used this as an option versus that as an option. But you don't know at the time. You know, it's like they say, you only know what you know and you don't know what you don't know. So once you sort of go through some things, then you get to a place where you're like, okay, in hindsight, looking back, that was a misstep that actually was a great lesson for me though. You know, like I didn't lose anything, or well, maybe sometimes you do, but you still learned. And that's the key thing. So that's how I just sort of look at that question. And the reason that I ask that question is because a lot of times, you know, we can learn from what other people have done and maybe what have been missteps from other people, you know, and you don't have to go through it yourself. So if you don't have a specific answer, all good. But
You know, I think only my missteps is like, I'm one of those people that get so caught up in my head and I don't do a switch. I don't do a pivot. I don't do a quit. Or like your recent episode, you know, about choice and change and making a change.
Right.
I don't do any of that because I'm not making a choice. I'm so paralyzed within my head. And that's something that is just a common misstep that I always catch myself making. Like what, like you're so much in your head, you're not taking action. If you're not taking action, then you're not learning. So that's what I always have to catch myself on. And in retrospect, I appreciate that I do that. And it's kind of like a misstep that, you know, I can, when I work with people, when I coach people, when I'm talking with people, I feel like I can relate to them when they're just like, I know what I want to do, but I don't know why I'm not doing it. I'm like, I feel you. I know. Like I feel that all the time. So it's a misstep and it continues to be a misstep, but I also like, It's part of, I think, what makes me and what makes me able to help people in the way that I do.
Do you have any routines or practices that maybe help you prepare to be at your best or your maximum, like operate at your maximum capacity, whether that be daily, weekly, monthly, what have you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I got so many. So there's different things I do. I love reflection. I love, just like little anchor habits. So like for me, when I make my coffee in the morning, that's like my, okay, it's time to go moment. That's like, okay, it's time to get into it. I put on like kind of relaxing music to get me into the like, okay, time to stop. Like, what did you like? Let's let the day end, whatever you didn't get to, it's okay. We'll get to it tomorrow. To kind of just like trigger me into that. I do yearly retreats with my, now fiance, which are, I mean, if anyone listening is in a relationship, I think it's one of the best things I've ever done for our relationship and also me as an individual. Mm-hmm. So we yearly reflect on, you know, what did we accomplish? What are we proud of? And then looking forward to the future, what are we trying to create together and as individuals? And then how can we support each other? Because I've realized, especially over the past few years, you know, Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich,
right?
He talks about the mastermind, right? Mm-hmm. And the importance of having a mastermind. What's something that he doesn't talk so much in his book, but I've heard him in different speaking, like audio things that he's created. And he's like the cutest old man I've ever listened to. Right. If you haven't listened to Napoleon Hill. But one of the things he talks about is that your partner is the first account mastermind that you'll ever have. And then the most important mastermind. So if you have a partner, like you guys together have to be working towards something. And there are times when, you know, I'm feeling like, what am I doing? Am I making the progress I want to be making? And I have that partner, that mastermind, that most important mastermind partner to be able to, you know, bring me back to where I'm supposed to be, and encourage and remind me of all the things I've done. Mm-hmm. So that's been super important. And then what else? I mean, I love checklists. So I'm doing that on the daily. Right. I love Asana. I love like the little check marks. So those are little things that I do. But yeah, I feel like I can go on and on about like little habits that
Yeah, that's good. I really like that accountability and checking in with your partner, because I think that though that relationship is something that is closest to you. And if you're kind of like slipping or things are a little bit shaky, if you don't have that person to sort of be there in your foundation to help you like stay on track, then like, what is their purpose? No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, like you need that, you know,
and it
goes both ways. So I love that you shared that, because that seems like a really beneficial thing, a nice little retreat. I love it.
Yeah, totally. Especially because like, I mean, for me, when I'm so much in my head, if I have self-doubts that come out, and if my partner has self-doubts about what I'm doing, who's on a day-to-day basis, who's going to pull me out if I can't get in touch with that bigger, like more wise person that's going to lead the way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's good to be in alignment too with what's going on and just sort of be on the same page, because I feel like sometimes when creatives put themselves out there, and whether you're working in an entrepreneurial capacity, freelance, whatever, sometimes it's hard for that connection to be there if the other person doesn't really understand what you're doing, what your goals are, and where this could potentially be going. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can build some disconnect, some frustration, all those things. So that's why I like that you bring it up as well, because it's an opportunity to be on the same page, to know clearly what's happening, what the goals are, and then just regularly check in after that. So there's no big mystery like, well, what are you doing all day long?
Yeah. You know? Or like, why aren't you spending time with me? Why are you still on your computer? Like, and when you do have success, like you want to celebrate with somebody.
Right.
And you're like, oh my God, for you, you just got in like with the bold women that you got mentioned within iTunes. If you can't celebrate with anybody, then, or if that your main friend or your main partner isn't going to be able to celebrate with you, it just makes like life not as fun and exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, oh, wow.
I'll tell my mom.
Yeah, exactly. So let's switch gears a bit. You run the program that you mentioned before called Be Brave, Get Paid.
Yes.
Why did you feel like this was like a critical topic for you to address?
Yeah. Well, I just... because it's a topic that I'm so passionate about. Because, you know, like I explained, nothing would have been possible in my life had I not learned to negotiate. Mm. You know, that's what enabled me to really be able to save my job and quit. And then when I started my business, you got to negotiate all the time. Right. And so if you don't know how to confidently own your worth and communicate it with confidence, you're not going to be able to really not make it, but you're going to have to like be moving your wheels a lot quicker in order to keep right. up, because you're not charging what you should be charging. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my experience, there are just so many freaking incredible women out there who are busting their ass and not getting paid what they deserve. And like, they know it, but they don't really have the tools or they don't feel confident in themselves to be able to do it. And so, you know, I've been running this workshop for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And I'll have women, I first did it like just in volunteering, you know, I was like, women got to know. So right. I go to colleges and be like, you guys, you got to learn this skill. And I teach it to men too. I'm happy to teach it to men. But I just love working with women. So I would teach them this and I would get emails afterwards like, Kat, I doubled the offer. I got $20,000 more. I got $5,000 more. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they wanted me to start right away, but I was able to push it for a month so I can travel. Mm-hmm. Like all these stories that were made me so happy. Happy and excited for them. And it was just for me, like fulfilling to know that I was making this big impact, because like, you know, $5,000 every year, that's a huge chunk of change to really to be able to support yourself. Yeah. And for me, you know, I had to work a lot to detangle my relationship with money, because I really thought it was like the worst thing ever. And I don't want to be greedy and, you know, all the bad things that are tangled up with that. But what I started to realize is that for me, money has actually enabled me to take more chances in my life and also create more opportunities for happiness for me, for my family, for my friends, for like my community at large. Mm-hmm. And the lack of money is what has led to the most stress in my life and the most frustration. So I just want to help as many women to, you know, earn what they should really be earning. And then at the same time to start to be able to enjoy the fruits of their labor, whether that's, you know, get yourself a coffee, get yourself a manicure, or like buy your friends a round of drinks, or, you know, take your parents out to a dinner and a movie, or, you know, whatever that is, giving back and even being able, you know, like I said in the beginning, I always knew I would come back to nonprofit. For me, you know, donating money to nonprofits that I want to support. So I just want to help more women feel more in control of their lives and to be able to create more opportunities of joy. And I think money and helping them negotiate is one of the quickest ways to be able to make that change.
Definitely. That's so true, for sure. What does personal development mean to you, mm-hmm. and what purpose or like role does it serve in knowing and asking for your worth when it comes to like negotiation and things like that?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing that, you know, we probably that comes up in my work is mm-hmm. that they talk, and when I say they, I talk about my students, mm-hmm. you know, they mention all the feelings that they're going through, like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to like, you know, offend somebody, or like, is this asking too much? And they're so caught up in the feelings that they forget about the facts. Mm. And self-confidence, I think, is created through like a mini feedback loop of like, you know, being able to advocate for yourself, believing in it to be able to take that action, which then, you know, feeds back into itself to help you again, to be able to stand up for yourself and mm-hmm. be more confident. Or if it's, you know, taking a change in your life, starting with small changes, which, you know, develop that confidence so that you can make a bigger change, which develop more self-confidence and again. Right. So, you know, when I'm working with the women that I help, it's a lot about shifting it from their feelings and all the emotions of like self-worth and lack to more of the, what are the facts? Like, let's dig into like how amazing you are. Mm-hmm. And once they start to see that, then that little bit of self-confidence starts to build. So we look at like, girl, like, let's look like, what are your accomplishments? What are your skills? What are the experiences? What do people say about you? Mm-hmm. Now taking all of those things, like, let's do some research. And then they're able to find, oh, okay, with all these things, actually, I should be making a little bit more. So mm-hmm. that little bit of fact and that little bit of action leads them to a little bit more self-confidence. Like, oh yeah, maybe I should ask for more. So maybe I'm practicing it. And it just slowly builds upon itself. But I think that's probably the two ways that feeds into itself. It's like little steps to help them shift from feelings more into facts, and the facts about how amazing they are, facts about how much they are really worth. And then as they begin to create that positive feedback loop, it helps them to develop that self-confidence in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think so many of us are like scared or intimidated by salary negotiation?
Oh my God. Cause it's so, well, it's, I think it's so scary. In the end of the day, it's like, I like you're making it up in terms of this is what I think I'm worth. Right.
Yeah.
So you could be an entrepreneur and be like, oh, I do consulting and consulting is $5,000 an hour. And just cause I say so, you know? And so I think when it comes to, you know, our work, we're so used to, I just perform really good. And then you tell me what I'm worth. Mm-hmm. And so if we have to negotiate, that means that that whole system isn't working. The whole system of I'm going to do good. And then you're going to tell me how much I get in return isn't working. It's basically you're saying I'm doing good work. You think I'm doing good. However, there's a gap in terms of what I should be getting paid. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like standing up to an authority figure is really scary because you're like, well, you know, they're in charge or they're in control of budgets or I don't want to be super greedy or it's so much of like you against a big entity. Mm-hmm. I think that makes it super, super scary. And just money is so taboo. We don't talk about it with anybody. You know, in our recent course, we've been having a lot of practice calls and I just want the women to talk about money and talk about their worth and what they think they're worth and talk about their accomplishments. No one really encourages us ever to talk about money and no one ever encourages us to talk about our accomplishments. Because if you talk about those things, kind of like, oh, she thinks she's so hot.
Right.
So when it comes time to negotiate your salary, you have to be comfortable doing those two things. How do you talk about yourself in a way that doesn't feel like slimy? And how do you talk about money in a way that doesn't make you feel greedy? Mm. And that takes a lot of work because no one ever lets us practice that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you touched on something too that I think is worth mentioning. Just, you know, a lot of times I think these companies, we think that they don't have it. Or, you know, like, oh, the department budget, especially if you've been working in a department for a while, maybe you don't know what the exact budget is, but you think like, oh, there's not enough money to give me this much. How could I dare ask for that much? But, you know, I think one of the things that I learned is that you should always ask, and the worst that could happen is they say, no, we don't have it, or you're not worth it, you know, to us, you know what I mean? Like we're not willing to make the sacrifice. But I think it's a common thing that happens with company money as well as personal money. You know, a lot of, I think freelancers, you don't want to overcharge because you think that people might not have it, but it's like, it's actually not your business. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, I was joking the other week on Instagram Live. And when I was telling them that the Switch Pivot or Quit planner course is actually coming out, and I'm like, no, it's not going to be $29. And I'm like, you know, cause some other courses that I have are, you know, that inexpensive. But the thing is, it's like, you will find the money to pay for what you want to pay for, i.e. Beyonce tickets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Beyonce is charging me like $400 to go see her in concert, and I don't hear a peep out of people. There's no complaint. They get the tickets. They get the outfits. They do the
It's like $1,000 by the time it comes out.
Exactly. By the time it's all said and done. But that's because that's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So I think a part of what we have to do as people and as women especially is stop trying to count other people's coins and just realize what we're worth and then tell people what you want and what you demand and they'll either say yes or no.
Yeah. And if it's reasonable, it shouldn't be like a point of contention. Mm-hmm. You're right. Like the worst thing that they're going to say is no. You know, it is possible. Like there are cases where people get fired, but at the end of the day, that's not a good company.
Right.
If you just had a simple conversation, you didn't come in aggressive. You were just trying to have an open dialogue about what does your future look like there? You know, what is the advancement look like? What does compensation look like moving forward? That's just a normal question.
Yeah.
So if somebody were to fire you, like that's good. It's almost like good but that you got out of the situation because you'd rather be in a situation where they're going to be supportive. It's all about the value that you bring to the table and how you position it. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, Beyonce is like, well, duh, that is so valuable. That's a once in a lifetime experience, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
If you can position whatever you talk about in a way that really you're showing the value that you add, then you're going to be able to get ahead. At the same time, if you have a manager that sees your value and can advocate you, you know, higher up the ranks, that's even better. And then the other thing is, something that you mentioned is that, you know, we'll kind of think, we'll already think ahead about, you know, can the department afford this? So many of us will negotiate against ourselves before we even get in the room. So it's not our responsibility to do the work for them. Do not already say, okay, well, I know I should be getting $50,000, but I know that they said they're working with a lower budget, so maybe I'll start at 45 instead. Mm-hmm. No, you start at 50. Mm-hmm. And if then from there, they can say, you know, we can't afford that. And you can go down from there. But you want to anchor to what you know you're worth and what you know is reasonable to ask for. And then it's just a matter of a conversation. It's just a conversation at the end of the day.
Right, right. What are some of the things that we can use maybe to our advantage when in a salary negotiation type situation?
Yeah. So it depends. There's two things. Like, you have to be aware of, you know, the differences of if you are asking for a raise versus if you're doing a first time salary negotiation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people kind of like going back to you'll negotiate against yourself. So many of us, I don't know if you've ever been in this position where you're just like, you know what, I'll take this pay, even if it's a little bit less. I don't want to negotiate for it because I don't want to be too much. And then I'm just going to go in there. I'm going to work my butt off and then they'll reward me. That's not how it happens. No. And when it comes to your raise, you typically, unless you can show proof that you're being significantly underpaid, mm-hmm. Or if you have like tons of leverage within the company, you can move up. Or if you know that you're getting paid less than your fellow employees, that's like almost legal grounds for you to be able to advocate for yourself in that way. But when it comes to negotiating a raise, you have to show proof, if you don't meet any of those criteria, that you've gone beyond what your role is. Mm-hmm. Because just doing your job well isn't merit for getting a raise. And I think that's something we all forget, because we accept a lower pay, we are going to go in there and work really hard, and then we expect them to reward us for it. No, they're going to continue to pay you what you already agreed to in the initial, mm-hmm. in the initial negotiation. That's why it's so important. And that's why I focus the most on that initial salary negotiation, because it's there that you set the tone for, like, you know, even if you don't even get anything out of the negotiation, you're setting the tone that you aren't a person who is just going to accept whatever they give you. You are a person that is going to have a dialogue about mm-hmm. what you feel like you deserve, and then try to see how we can meet in the middle. So it's going to set the tone. Yeah. So those are two things I would keep in mind is, you know, be aware of what your situation is. And then if you're trying to get a raise, you have to, unless you are significantly underpaid, you have to have grounds that you've gone above and beyond. If not, your best bet is always in a new negotiation. That's mm-hmm. when you're going to get the big jump.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going into a new position and this is a new salary negotiation, what are some of the things that are up for grabs mm-hmm. when negotiating that, you know, maybe the average person may not think of or mm-hmm. may not know in lieu of money?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, because we often think about money, and money is, you want to start the conversation there always. If you were to go in and be like, well, let's talk about vacation, or let's talk about, you know, sick time, then they're going to be able to say, you know, when it comes time to money after that, well, we gave you all these things, so we can't really do anything about the money. So you always want to start the conversation with money. And then once you can come to a number that you know, where it's not really budging, that's when it's time to essentially say, like, okay, I really appreciate that we are able to meet in the middle with this number. You know, now I'd like to discuss blank. And you almost want to have in your mind a few things that you would want to discuss. Now, if it took you a really, really, really long time to get that negotiation, you know that there are really tired of the process and you're super grateful for what they were able to give you, then you don't need to necessarily talk about the other things. But if you're in the case where they're significantly paying you a lot less than what you were expecting, that's when you should feel comfortable to come to the table with other things. So other things can include, you know, increased vacation time. It can include different sick time. It can, like, if you have a child, different things in terms of childcare, or just like understandings about, you know, if a doctor's appointment comes up, et cetera. It can include a later start date, because, you know, sometimes it's in both our best interest and the company's best interest for them to give us like a week or a few weeks or even a month in between time, so that you can close that loop, mm-hmm. you know, have a little bit of rest, get in the mindset about what you're going to do, and then come in strong.
Right.
So all these things, it's again, like, you position in a way that it's not just beneficial to you, it's going to be beneficial to the company. So mm-hmm. yeah, I understand salary can't meet me there. You know, I would be happy if I can get 3 extra days of vacation during Christmas time, mm-hmm. something like that. So those are big ones. Education is big. Companies, oftentimes, whether it's a cell phone and helping you pay for that, a gym, mm-hmm. Transportation reimbursement. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one where my partner at the time, you know, I was still living in San Francisco, Francisco. And one of the things, because they weren't able to meet me at the right number that I wanted once I went to full time, is that I negotiated, they would pay for all my flights to Los Angeles. So anytime I wanted to go to Los Angeles, they would pay for it. And I would just work out of the LA office. Wow. And they would also pay for my transportation because I didn't have a car in LA. They pay for my transportation to and from the office.
That is a come up.
You know?
I love it. Yes.
So there are a lot of things like that that maybe, you know, for the company, that doesn't cost that much money because they can just write it off in terms of regular business travel. But for me, that's huge. Yeah. That's like $200 at least every time I want to go down to LA.
Right. So that's a major selling point for you for sure. Yes. So let's talk about the big question of how much did you make at your last job?
Mm-hmm.
You know that's going to come up, and that's probably going to come up before the salary negotiation even started. So how do you sort of suggest that people go about tackling that question?
Yes. And that is such a tricky one because as soon as they get that number, you know that they're going to just, you know, bump you up just a little bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. So depending on what state you're in, you know, for California, it's now illegal. You cannot ask that question.
Really?
Yes. And a lot of people don't know that, you know, within California. So that's a big thing I always try to talk about when I do speaking events here in the state, is because so many people don't know that. But if you knew that, it's a little bit of self-confidence because you know that they technically can't ask it, rather than feeling like, oh shoot, I'm supposed to give this to them.
Yeah.
So there's a few other states that are moving on board. There's even individual cities. So the first thing I would do, and you can, you know, maybe I can include it in a resource for your listeners, is where to access this for, you know, your city or your state to learn about what are the rules. Cause it is potential that they can't ask that to you. But what I would say is either way, they're going to try to find out. Like even if it's illegal, they might ask a different question, which brings you to the idea of what is that salary, right? They might, we just need a ballpark range. We don't need the exact number.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what state you live in or city you live in, it doesn't matter. You will want to avoid that question. The first way that I would recommend doing it is, you know, this will often come up within the interview. And I try to avoid salary and I recommend most people to avoid salary during the initial interview. Because what you almost want to do is not be buttering them up, but you want them to want you so bad that you get the job offer. And once you get the job offer, that's when they're going to be more willing to negotiate with you.
Right.
But when you're up against maybe five other candidates, if you say a number that's too high, then maybe you're not going to get on to the next round of the interviews. And so what I would recommend to do in that situation, especially if it's coming up in the interview, is that you say something along the lines of, you know, I'd be happy to talk about expectations and compensation at later time, but right now I really want to make sure that this is a good fit for the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then lead that off and just immediately go into your next question. It's almost like how politicians do it. So with that, I'd love to learn, you know, how would you describe the company culture here? Or what would a day in the life look like here? So just take their question and almost ignore it. Just acknowledge it. Yep, sure, no problem. But here, let's talk about this. And if they keep coming back to it, you know, especially within the interview, you say, you know what, you know, based off of, especially if you learned a lot, this becomes a lot easier. But, you know, I've learned so much about, you know, what this role would entail. And I think my expectations have been about what it would, what the compensation would look like has changed. Maybe you can start off the conversation, what is in the budget for this position?
Uh-huh.
And just put it back on them and see what they say.
Yeah.
If they say they don't know, you know, it's almost like if you go to an open house and you say, how much is this house? And they're like, we don't know yet.
You
We're
know.
Just waiting to see what you're going to offer. It's like, no, you know, you know about how much it should be. And so they should give it. So that's another thing. In some states like California, this is now legal requirement that they tell you what their budget is.
Wow.
So yes. So there's a lot of laws that, you know, I'm not a big person that like is loving laws, and I'm not lawyer and not policy. Yeah. And I'm trying to learn about it, but there are things that are in place that will really help you. So even if this isn't something that you know, you're not a person that's going to go into law, there's little, even just things that you can check out through the AAUW where you can say, hey, I would like to vote for this to be something of a topic within, you know, my state or my city. So even just little acts like that will maybe help to push things through so that your state or your city can adopt these things too. Because I know for here in California, that's an amazing push that is going to be able to help and support the employee, that you can ask about previous salary. And that if you ask them about what their budget is, they're supposed to tell you.
Yeah. Woo, Kat, that's some good information, girl.
Yes.
These are things that I definitely didn't know, and I'm sure will be majorly beneficial to everyone listening, because everyone has been in that awkward situation where you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
You know coming, you know you're going to have to deal with it. So yeah, that's some good information. Are there any big, like, glaring no-nos in negotiating?
Yeah, well, I think along those same lines, I mean, this maybe seem common sense outside of the conversation, but don't talk about money during the interview process. Don't be like, oh, how much should I get?
Yeah.
Or like all those things. That's like one big no-no. Mm-hmm. The other one is accepting the job on the spot. Mm. And if you know that this is your dream position, and in the interview, they're like, we need to know today and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Maybe you can accept on the spot. But what I would recommend for anybody is you have to ask for some time to look over the offer. Mm. So they want to offer you the position. You know, a lot of people I talk to, they're like, they offered it to me in the interview. I didn't want to say no. I didn't want to make them feel like I didn't care. So you have to be ready and prepared with a statement that says, oh my gosh, like, I really appreciate this. This is exciting to hear. I've really loved learning about the company. As you can understand, this is a huge decision. Can you give me at least blank hours to look it over the offer? So if it's, you know, an interview and they need to know by the end of the day, you say, you know, can you give me at least 24 hours? Or if they're like, we can't give you 24 hours, you know, I need a minimum of you know, 6 hours or something to be able to make this decision, because it's a big decision. But ideally, you're not doing it within the day. Ideally, you're going to go back home and have at least 1 or 2 days, if not a week, to really review that negotiation. And you want to get it in writing. They're going to want to just say it verbally, but unless you see that offer in writing, it doesn't have any legal grounds. So you need to get the offer in writing and then be able to look at it. The last thing that I would say is that you accept the negotiation as just a one-time interaction. So many of us will say, okay, we get up the nerve, we finally ask, and then they say, you know, we can't do that. And then we're like, okay, well, I accept. Don't do that. Understand that a negotiation can happen over the course of multiple conversations, if not, you know, a few days or a week. Mm. You know, some people that I've worked with, it's lasted almost a month for them to be able to negotiate their deal. But in the end, they got like $35,000 more in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a huge jump. So, don't shoot yourself in the foot by bowing out too quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, if they say, you know, we really can't do that, you can ask them something like, are you positive that you can't? And then they have to be able to say, yes, I'm positive that we can't. Mm. Or you can say, is it possible that you can look further into this?
Mm.
You know, like just that. Simple lines like that, because you don't want to be in that position where you accept it and then you start the job and then you are like, oh my God. You know, you find out, especially I find out from a coworker, they're getting $5,000 more than me.
Yeah.
That's just the worst feeling. And then you no longer want to be there. Your morale is down and you're ready to go into your next opportunity. And that's not the way you want to start. That's not the way they want you to start.
Absolutely. Kat, this is some good stuff, girl. I appreciate it. My last question, because I know we could talk about this stuff forever, but I'm going to wrap up here. My last question is, what does success mean or look like for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you asked me that question about, you know, what is some missteps, mm-hmm. I think that for me, that's kind of how I look at success. Like success looks that I'm trying things, like I'm growing, that I'm learning. And in that sense, I'm always moving forward. Mm. And because I don't ever think that there's one finite success. Once you hit one milestone, you know, you feel this feeling of accomplishment, but then your new definition of success grows, you know, you hit. Mm-hmm. So on this podcast, so you hit like 100,000 downloads in a day. It's like, that's amazing, but your success isn't done. You're going to be like, well, can we hit 500,000 downloads in a day?
Yeah.
So it's always going to grow. So I don't think that there's one definition of success, but I always think that there's a journey towards a greater feeling of success in your mm-hmm. day-to-day life.
Absolutely. I love that. Well, let everybody know before we go where they can find you, see more of you, connect with you, maybe get your coaching on their next salary negotiation, and just maybe hang out with you online.
Yes. So you can go to kathlynhart.com, and Kathlyn's a little bit hard to spell, but it's K-A-T-H-L-Y-N and then H-A-R-T.com. That's where you can go to learn about me. If you want to, you know, hang out with me, connect with me, I'm going to be starting to create some free video contents for salary negotiation techniques. Awesome. And then if you're ready to like jump into the course and you want to learn how you can, you know, be brave and get paid, then you can go to bebravegetpaid.com. I have a wait list there. We are currently doing them in, you know, like monthly, 1 month at a time, so I can really focus on helping all those individuals. Yeah. So we have a wait list that's available there, and you can sign up to be in our next group.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kat, for taking the time out to chat with us, to share what you know, because I'm sure that there's a lot that people didn't know, because there's definitely a lot that I didn't know, as well as sharing your story with us. Like, this has been an awesome conversation. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. And as always, you guys, keep killing it.